Springfield's Talk 1041. I'm Nick Reed. Sounds like there's been some sort of agreement regarding this 5G rollout and how they won't put it within a couple mile radius of airports because numerous airlines have written letters to whatever agency, I guess the FAA, saying that 5G could wreak havoc with their instruments. And it is somewhat reminiscent, if you recall, I'm sure many of you do, in cell phones for the longest time. They said don't use your cell phones in the airplane because it could do this same thing. People would do it anyhow. Now, that's gone largely to the wayside, though they still do upon takeoff and landing ask that you put it in airplane mode. And I know a lot of airlines, they offer Wi-Fi so that you can utilize that if you want to. But what they're saying is that, and I don't know if this is something that they're guessing would occur if they've tested it, but that the altimeters, which tell the pilot how high in the air they are, could get all jacked up if people are using that 5G service is even there in the area, which landings in particular, takeoffs as well, could be very dangerous, especially if you got real foggy weather and you're relying on your instruments. If you know, you are 500 feet and you can't see where you are, but you know your altimeter tells you that you're at 1,500 feet and you're actually at 500 or vice versa, and you know, land in a crash land in a neighborhood or you overshoot the runway. So that's what they say that their fears are specifically. So I don't know if that's just something that they believe could potentially happen and they don't know that there's been enough testing or if they have somehow tested it. But there are some airlines, or at least one in particular out of Europe, said, we ain't even flying to the U.S. any longer if this is going to be a thing. There is a chance we're going to see rain, snow, sleet today. Get you that full forecast. I can tell you this now. While the temperature currently is somewhat mild, I suppose, it's 43. It by the afternoon, mid-afternoon or so, it's going to drop below freezing, and it's not expected for the rest of the week to get above that. With temperatures dipping way below freezing overnight. Wind chill tonight, 2 below that in just a couple of moments. Jason Ryman now with the latest news update. First Alert forecast sponsored by Hanson's Tree Service. A 40% chance of rain and snow showers before noon, then a chance of snow showers after noon. Cloudy, temperatures are going to fall to around 29 by 4 this afternoon. Wind chill values as low as 18. Tonight, clouds clearing, low of 9, 2 below wind chill. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, high of 23, overnight 8. Friday, sunny, a high of 30. It's 43 and cloudy. If you missed any of the previous hour, I do recommend that you go back and listen to it. Our on-demand section is at ksgf.com also. The KSGF app, it says podcast. We're talking about new revelations regarding, one, the Gretchen Whitmer, quote, kidnapping case, and then new information regarding January 6th. And all of it involves new revelations regarding individuals that either were working on behalf or for the FBI, and some that, by all appearances, were, though there are denials about it, and that would be the Ray Epps situation. Not to mention, there are a couple of others as well, incidentally. It's not just Ray Epps. Ray Epps is the one, though, that was on video actually encouraging people to storm the Capitol. Two other individuals that have completely dropped off the FBI's most wanted list regarding January 6th was one guy who, in still shots, was seen with an earpiece in and a sidearm, and another individual that was seen actually physically assaulting a federal officer, and without any explanation at all, FBI just quietly removes them and say, oh, we're not interested in these people any longer. Now, the Federalist has a story. Texas synagogue attack smells like more evidence of FBI corruption. Madeline Osborne writes, after all hostages were released from Beth Israel Synagogue in Coleyville, Texas, where they were held for 11 hours on Saturday, FBI Special Agent in Charge Matt DeSarno from the Dallas field office told reporters that the gunman was, quote, focused on one issue that was unrelated to the Jewish community and that they are, quote, continuing to work to find the motive. That one issue is presumably the imprisonment of Afia Siddiqui, also known as Lady Al-Qaeda, a Pakistani national who is serving an 86-year sentence in prison less than 20 miles from the synagogue. The gunman, Malik Faisal Akram, a 44-year-old British citizen, was heard shouting about her release and demanding to speak with his, quote, sister, a terrorist whose release mainstream Muslim groups have recently been lobbying for. Akram died of shotgun wounds after the hostages were released. The FBI statement that they are continuing to work to find the motive is another example of the agency's ineptitude on multiple levels. The first is simply their refusal to even hint at the crime's motivation as anti-Semitism, which is the only accurate label for an attack on a synagogue on Shabbat, where a rabbi and three congregants are held hostage. He told Fox News, if the law enforcement community doesn't understand what's going on, they're not going to be able to address the fallout from this. This is Kenneth Marcus, founder and chairman of the Lewis D. Center for Human Rights Under Law. He said, this was not a mere slip-up. It is symptomatic of a widespread failure with law enforcement to understand the problems of anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism. Now, I'm going to stop here. I don't know that it is a lack of understanding as much as an attempt to paint all things evil coming from conservatives, coming from constitutionalists, coming from Trump supporters. We see how the FBI focuses. I mean, look at January 6th. We see how it just this apparent nonstop drilling down. We will stop at nothing at all to go after people that we openly will connect as Trump supporters, that will openly call out as being politically motivated. But as this piece is pointing out, for whatever reason, if that individual that commits an act of terrorism, they can't make that connection. They dismiss the connection to whatever the source may be. We don't really know. It's no big deal. Don't worry about it. Nothing to see here. The piece continues, but perhaps even more frustrating is the FBI's corrupt obsession and use of resources on cases that suit their political fancy, like the January 6th Capitol riot or Operation Varsity Blues, catching rich people scamming to get their underachieving kids into top universities, while at the same time letting serious violent threats to America fly under the radar. The BBC reports that Akram arrived in the United States via New York's JFK International Airport 2 weeks ago, and he is believed to have bought a handgun used in the incident after his arrival, which would have required him to pass a federal background check, a system run by none other than the FBI. Now, since this piece has been published, there are new reports that they're seeking an individual who picked him up at the airport and questions as to whether or not that individual purchased the weapon for him. The BBC reports, isn't it funny you have to go to the BBC to get much of this information? Our own media seems oblivious to these facts. The BBC report also said that the FBI would be conducting investigations in Pakistan, quote, where it is understood Akram had been recently, to establish if he was acting alone or was supported by others. Perhaps he bought the gun on the street, as President Joe Biden has claimed. But that still leaves questions as to what the FBI ought to know about who is helping foreigners who recently traveled to Pakistan to purchase illegal firearms. Even with the details sparse on what the FBI could or could not have known about the gunman, this caught-off-guard response from federal agents is sadly what Americans have come to expect from our top law enforcement agency. The FBI's failure as an entire institution in recent years are too long to list here, But looking at just the mass shootings and explosions alone that happened after the FBI was aware of the assailants as potential threats is frightening. My colleague Joy Pullman has documented a number of instances in which the FBI was aware of threats before the violence occurred and did nothing, she writes. For example, the 2009 Fort Hood shooter, who killed 13. The Boston Marathon bombers of 2013, who killed 3 and injured 264. The Pulse nightclub shooter, who killed 49 people and wounded 53 more. All were known to the FBI, and several had been interviewed by the FBI before they were on killing sprees. The FBI had also been warned numerous times about the Parkland, Florida school shooter before he killed 17 and injured 17 more in 2018. The FBI also knew beforehand about the 2018 Nashville, Tennessee Waffle House shooter who killed 4 and injured 2 more and the 2020 Nashville RV bomber. The FBI also has a bad track record of categorizing motives and crimes just as in Colleyville. Last spring, it was brought to light by Republican congressmen that after the 2017 congressional baseball shooting, the FBI told lawmakers that the mass assassination attempt was officially designated as suicide by cop. The Fort Hood attack, carried out as a radical Islamist, was designated by the FBI as, quote, workplace violence. Whether it is their inability to move on threats before they occur or their corrupt labels after the fact, the FBI is notorious for botching both. In the Texas synagogue case, they've already missed the mark on one. It will be wholly unsurprising if new details eventually confirm the other. I've never been naive enough to believe that every human being that is in a government institution is pure as the driven snow. Even as, and I know a lot of you are this way as well, you grew up having a respect for the institutions of law and order. You respect the idea and the concept of law and order and equal justice. And with that, generally inherently, sometimes by default, will come a respect for the institutions that are charged with making sure that law and order exist. I don't think, again, like me, most people believe that that meant that there was absolutely no corruption at all, but I will tell you this. My understanding and recognition of what goes on within these institutions, what we learned regarding the CIA and the FBI, specifically during the Trump years and what they attempted to do to Trump, the lying, the falsifying of evidence, and then the covering for Hunter Biden during the election. While this, you had all these former members of the CIA falsely claiming that it was just a Russian misinformation campaign and that there was no such laptop, I have come to fully believe that these institutions are run by absolute corrupt individuals. And corruption trickles down. And while I don't believe that that means every single person in those institutions are corrupt, I've got an upside down flip understanding of these institutions, whereas they're run by people who have the best interests of truth and justice in mind. And yeah, you're going to get some rogue people that do things that are unethical, but hopefully in the end they'll get caught and be taken care of. Those are the exceptions. I'm beginning to believe that the honest and ethical within these organizations, those are the exception, not the rule. And the rule is the corruption. And the reason that I see as evidence of that is once the corruption gets exposed, nothing is done about it. At the very most, a slap on the wrist. Because you cannot always judge an institution when something bad occurs within it, but you can judge how the institution reacts to it. And if they swiftly take care of it, sending the message that that is not acceptable here, that tells you a bit about who they are. But if they excuse it, if they point fingers, blame others, if they deny it, or just totally, completely ignore it, that too tells you about the institution itself. Springfield's Talk 104.1, I'm Nick Reed. You know, even if the media were honest, there is a bit of a difficult job in dissecting and explaining what numbers mean. And some of this is by design. The unemployment number, for example, is so misleading. So misleading. If you were to go out and ask 100 people randomly, what is the unemployment number? How is that number? How do they come to that number? What's the formula? I suspect a very significant portion of the population would say that it's the percentage of people that are not working. Well, that's not true at all. There are vast numbers of people that are not working that are not counted as unemployed. An unemployed person is someone who's out there actively seeking a job. They're actively looking for a job. Can't find it. So you could have 50% of able-bodied people not working. But if those 50%, just to illustrate here how this works, not a single one of them actually wanted a job. They're like, no, I'm fine sitting on my butt. The unemployment rate would be zero because none of them are looking for a job. So 3.8% simply means that of all of the people that are not working, that you've got 3.8% that are trying to find a job, but say that they can't get one. Those are vastly different things. Now, I'm not arguing that there isn't an appropriate place for that number, but the public consumption of it, just throwing it out there, and, you know, it's got a 3.8, you know, unemployment rate, that doesn't. Here's the problem I have with the media using that number and the government using that number. Is that the majority of people who hear that number have a misunderstanding as to what it means. And particularly for the media. Some of it's laziness. Some of it's negligence. Some of it is because that number sounds good. And, you know, they want to do everything they can to make Biden sound good. Or look good, like his policies are working here. But it's just, to me, it's so counter to everything that's ingrained in me. And I'm not a journalist, I'm not a reporter, I'm just a guy that talks about this stuff on the radio. But even as somebody that's not a reporter or journalist, where my goal is for you, like in my head, here's what's going on, to word it in a way that you have the absolute best understanding possible as to that truth. And so giving out unemployment numbers as they are and saying, well, the unemployment rate is 3.8%, knowing that a significant, probably a majority of Americans believe that to mean of the able-bodied working people or able-bodied people out there, there are only 3.8% of them that don't have jobs. And providing a number that I know people are going to have the wrong understanding of what that means, it's just counter to everything that's ingrained in me, and it just drives me nuts to see that stuff happen all the time.
Oh, yeah, that was the first thing.
You've got the Biden administration out there talking about jobs created. Now, or people that get jobs, and this is different as well. The difference between the number of people who got jobs versus the number of jobs that are out there in existence. Mm-hmm. And that number has suffered greatly because, you know, companies don't have the revenue that are coming in. They've had to let people go. Perhaps with COVID and the shutdowns, they had to let 50% go, and they just haven't been at the capacity to hire, you know, those to have those jobs back open. Maybe none of them, maybe some of them. And so there are less jobs that are available today than there were 3 years ago.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
The areas of the country, though, and this is the kicker of it, in which if you wanted to honestly look at things getting back to normal to brag about, because if you're the president, right, that's what you would think you would want to be able to honestly say, ah, look, got things back to where they were. That's right. The areas of the country that's happening are states that are run by Republicans. So the only straws that exist for the Democrats to grasp at are straws that exist because of Republicans. It's kind of pathetic if you think about it. At the only bragging points that the Biden administration can find to use only exist because of the people that he and his party are trying to destroy. Red State has a list through some of the different states here and how it's once again a clear divide in results between the two parties. Springfield's Talk 104.1, I'm Nick Reed. Very first place you need to visit if you are going to be looking at a home to buy, or maybe just even for your own enjoyment, and you're thinking, well, we're not really looking for a new home. I mean, if we ever came across the perfect home, or maybe in your head you're not, but then your wife is, you know, she's like, we have to get this home. If you have not gone to iwantagreathomeloan.com, you're out of the game. Things, as you know, move very, very quickly. This is something we've learned over the last couple of years. Houses will go within minutes. There will be dozens of different offers. And if you have not already got in your hand a letter saying that you're good for it, you know, they say, all right, we need $295,000. And you say, oh, we love it, we'll take it. Oh, so you're qualified, you're good to go. Well, let's see, it's Sunday between 2 and 4, because that's when these showings oftentimes take place. And let's see, oh, Monday, that's a holiday. So first thing Tuesday, man, no, you're out. You've got to do that part first, okay? iwantagreathomeloan.com. Just takes a few minutes, fill out some basic info, and somebody from Don's team will communicate with you on what all information they need and get you all set up. And then you'll be ready. iwantagreathomeloan.com, because you do. And you know what? If you end up not buying a home, you'll at least know where you stand when it comes to your credit. If you have anything you didn't realize that was there, maybe it just slipped under the radar, or maybe even something that somebody else did illegally. These are things that you'll potentially learn in the process as well. First alert forecast, 40% chance of rain, snow showers before noon, then a chance of snow showers after 1. Temperatures are going to fall through the day. We're going to hit around 29 by 4 p.m. Wind chill values as low as 18. Tonight, clouds will clear out. The low will be 9 with a wind chill factor of 2 below 0. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, high of 23, low of 8. Friday, sunny, high of 30, expected. Current temperature is 43. Speaking of tomorrow, make that 39. We're seeing that drop already. Tomorrow being Thursday, we've got an interesting author of the week, sponsored by ABC Books, in the 8 o'clock hour. And he's a guy in the world of education, academia, and he did this worldwide in-depth research project regarding schools. And what he learned is that it is the most effective way to teach kids is through private schools, but it can be done at low cost. In fact, and this is fascinating stuff that you'll learn reading the book that you probably didn't know. What do we think of private schools as being something for, oh, it's a white privilege thing, right? Oh, here in the West. Here in America, these are things that vast majority of people in the world don't have access or financing to. In parts of Africa, 70%+ of kids are in private schools. And they do remarkably well. The cost is lower than what it costs public schools. And that while we fancy ourselves as being the leader when it comes to this, and we even oftentimes shame ourselves that we're so wealthy, while certain countries in Africa specifically aren't, and they just don't have a chance, they're actually doing a better job through their private school systems of educating their children than we are in this country with the insane amount of money that we spend per child, relatively speaking. So that'll be our author of the week tomorrow, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone. Four states, Texas, Arizona, Idaho, Utah, have now seen full recovery in their labor markets following COVID-19 and the lockdown-induced recession. Wall Street Journal reported yesterday, Texas and Arizona joining two other states in recovering all the jobs they lost at the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, leading a trend that is expected to include another dozen states by the middle of the year. The states, which also include Utah and Idaho, have benefited from demographic shifts between and during the pandemic, experiencing outsized payroll growth in retail, warehousing, technology, and transportation industries. The outlet added that the state's labor markets have been aided by inbound workers and companies launching operations in the regions. Quote, the states, all Republican controlled, I'm sure that's a coincidence, also have had relatively relaxed COVID-19 restrictions during the pandemic, which economists say soften the blow on their economies. Those four states have experienced persistently strong population growth, which really wasn't dented by the pandemic, Moody's Analytic Director of Regional Economics, Adam Kimmons, explained. More and more people keep coming from expensive coastal cities to places like Dallas and Phoenix, which have a relatively lower cost of living and higher quality of life. The Moody's analytics director noted that California and states in the Northwest are lagging behind, a.k.a. blue states run by Democrats. This is very frustrating to watch for thinking people. We have before us such absolute clear examples of what works. And it's a very simple way to figure it out. Let me throw this at you. A lot of times what will occur, you'll get people on the left who are obsessed with this idea that they have this magical way about them that is going to be able to do what no one else has ever been able to do and create a government-heavy, centrally controlled economy and going to make it work better than a free market system. Now, no one's ever done it in the history of mankind, but people on the left, the Bernie Sanders, the Gavin Newsoms, all of these people, they believe they are the anointed ones, that they will do what no one else in the history of mankind has been able to do. And they'll throw at you, well, economic experts say this, economics experts say that. They'll regurgitate. Well, you know, during this period of time, this happened and so forth. There's only one thing you need to know. Only one thing. People's behavior. And the fact of the matter is, people continue consistently to flee blue states and go to red states. That's all you need to know. People migrate towards what they believe is going to be a better life. You do not have people consistently, whether they are individual parents regarding their children being raised, individuals that are concerned about crime and safety, business owners that are looking for a better, healthy business atmosphere and environment. You don't have people like that move from a blue state to a red state consistently because it's worse there. It's common sense. This is the same understanding when it comes to this argument that we hear from the left about what a horrible racist country this is, how awful. Yet you have people from all over the world, primarily individuals that once they're here qualify as the victims of our evil society that risk their lives in order to get here. Now, does that make sense? Of course it doesn't. People don't leave a place that they recognize is better to go to a place that they believe and recognize is worse. That doesn't happen. Especially in large scales. I mean, you may have people that make dopey decisions once in a while, but to consistently, year after year after year, state after state, watch people leave blue states and go to red states. That's all you need to know. Now, I'm not saying that we don't, that there isn't benefit to understanding why it is that the quality of life across the board is better in red states than it is blue states. Because, you know, there's value in understanding that. But you don't need to know anything other than the migration patterns to understand which is better. And the left can say all they want, talk about studies, talk about compassion. But walking the walk is what's important. And we continue to see it. Now, where you and I, as thinking people, oftentimes have a difficult time wrapping our minds around things, and it's just mind-boggling to me. Like, why do these people run for office? I'm talking about blue state people. Somebody like a governor, for example. I mean, what is the goal? You and I think the goal is to make things better for the people, right? Well, it's very clear the examples of where that happens. Yet instead of going, okay, let's look at the successes. What did those states do? Let's do that. They continue to do the things that cause a lower quality of life for people in their states. That just defies logic, and that is why it is so difficult for most of us to believe this. Or to understand what goes on in the minds of these people. Now, I understand when it comes to voters that are lied to. And if you receive your information from a media that is going to rally for one side, you're susceptible to being misled. But these people who run for office, other than just power and control, and that is something for a lot of particularly honest, ethical, moral people that is, in and of itself, not of any great interest. And so it escapes us that there are people that just have that level, that's all they want. What I've always thought, though, is a missed opportunity for those people is if you really want the power, and so they think, well, I'll get reelected and so forth, just make things, you could still do that by making things better for your people. Because let's be honest, people who make things worse get elected. People who make things better get elected and reelected. So to decide to choose the path in which people's lives get worse, I just don't understand that. And honestly, I'm glad that I don't. Springfield's Talk 104.1, I'm Nick Reed. Biden is going to hold a press conference today, scheduled for 4 Eastern, so that'd be 3 here. Hannity's on, so I know he'll carry that. He'll probably blow through breaks, as he oftentimes does, whenever there's something like that going on. I'm always pretty good at figuring out game plan stuff. You got an administration recognize, okay, we're in a pickle here, so we got to come out and spin it here. I don't know what the game plan is with this. I say that because Biden never does himself any favors. I don't think Biden has ever come out and spoken, talked to reporters or given a formal press conference, which he hasn't done for some time. He, of course, is known for not doing the formal press conferencing. And in the end, it helped him in any way, shape, or form. In fact, we have seen a very, well, over the year, it's been the constant dropping in approval numbers. And the administration, they're publicly allowing it to be known, well, they're going to reboot him. Kamala Harris is going through the same thing. Hillary is going through the same thing. If it gives you any sense of how lacking these people are in any genuine personality traits, any authenticity, it's the fact that they openly say, okay, well, we're going to kind of try to start over and reintroduce these people. How long? Biden has been in politics longer than most, or at least a significant portion of the population, has even been alive. Same thing with Hillary. Yet they, well, we're going to refashion. I don't know what the game plan possibly could be for Biden. Is it going to come out and continue to try and demonize Americans as being racist? And you know, these things don't work. Is he going to continue to tell us how dangerous that Trump is and Trump supporters are? That isn't working. Dividing Americans just doesn't work. Are they going to pump him full of some drug that they think is just going to make him sharp enough? They're going to roll the dice and think maybe that old Joe will have flashes of a comeback during the Q&A and you know, at least that'll satisfy the press for another year before he has to give another conference. I don't know. I'm going to be interested to see how it plays out. I will say this. I suspect Biden, there's probably a greater degree of interest in his press conferences now than, I don't know about with Trump. Trump, there was a curiosity factor, but just the train wreck nature of what could come with Biden. And maybe they're figuring, hey, as long as Biden doesn't crash and burn and soil himself in front of everyone and lick the face of a child, then we can call it a victory because the bar is set extremely low. Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed. February 4, Reba will be at the queue. Tickets upon the opening of sales last year just were gone almost instantly. I mean, within a day, all the regular seats, if you will, went, and then the more expensive ones not long after that. We do have a pair of tickets to give away. If you go to ksgf.com, it should be one of the first things you see. Register to win a pair of those tickets. I believe it will be through this week you can register, so just head on over there, and you get an opportunity to win a pair of tickets to see Reba McEntire live in concert at the Q on the 4th. Our on-demand section also there at ksgf.com and the KSGF app. It last week, I think it was, or up until last week, there was a little tiny on-demand icon in the bottom right-hand corner that wasn't something that popped out at you. So we added a button that's the podcast button that is very prominent. When you open it up, there's six tiles there, one for calling the studio and one for texting the studio on the American Transmissions talk and text line, and then ways to either stream live or get the podcast. So that's easier to find for you now as well. News in 60 seconds. I'm Nick Reed.